Today on Straight Talk Africa, we discuss and analyze the challenges facing women and girls in Africa on their road to empowerment. And we'll compare notes on what needs and must be done in order to achieve social and economic justice for the African women and girls. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ian Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we are looking at the challenges facing women and girls in Africa in their struggle for gender equality.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
The African Union has declared 2010 to 2020 the African Women's Decade. Last week, the United Nations launched the African Women's Leadership Network to support women's leadership across the continent. But as my colleague Haide Adams-Fitzpatrick reports, African women need more than international institutional support on their road to meaningful empowerment.
When it comes to trailblazing, African women are in a league of their own. They are pioneers, freedom fighters, artists, and winners of Nobel Prizes, Oscars, and gold medals, leaders in the world of business, academia, and politics. They're also farmers, homemakers, teachers, and nurturers, long the backbone of Africa's economies. But statistics reveal African women are also marginalized, oppressed, displaced, and disadvantaged, bearing the brunt of war, violence, and poverty. The world's top five countries with the most women in their workforce are all in sub-Saharan Africa. Yet women get paid the least, and in many cases, they don't get paid at all. Inequality begins early. Of the more than 16 million girls out of school in sub-Saharan Africa, more than half will never set foot in a classroom. If you're poor and a girl, chances are you'll have to drop out of school, get married early, and spend your time cooking, cleaning, and caring for family members. You'll likely be more vulnerable to maternal mortality and disease. Gender-based violence is widespread. In South Africa, one in every four women has experienced physical violence. Female genital mutilation is still practiced in 27 African countries. African women and girls are regularly sold into slavery at home and abroad. Other statistics, though, show that Africa's women politicians have been overcoming these odds. 2012 was arguably the most historic year for women shattering the political glass ceiling. South Africa's Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma became the first woman to lead the African Union. The Gambia's Fatou Bensouda was appointed chief prosecutor at the International Criminal Court. Joyce Banda became Malawi's first woman president, joining Liberia's Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who made history 7 years before as Africa's first female head of state. Women's representation in politics has made substantial progress throughout sub-Saharan Africa, where the percentage of female parliamentarians increased to 22% last year, outstripping developed countries like the United States and Japan. Rwanda leads the world's rankings in women's representation. 61% of its parliament is female. Women make up more than 40% of South Africa's parliament. Much of the success has been thanks to progressive laws that require political parties to nominate female candidates. Countries like Uganda, Kenya, Burundi, Senegal, and Angola have all adopted electoral gender quotas, paving the way for women who dare shake up the status quo. Some successes, some shortcomings. Perhaps the greatest challenge for women's empowerment in Africa is to ensure that everyday women and girls are afforded the same opportunities as elites. Haide Adams-Fitzpatrick, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Haide, for that report. Joining us here in Washington are two distinguished guests, Monipere Osua Ansong, 2016-2017 Hubert Humphrey Fellow at Cornell University, and CEO and founder, Ms. Food Safety Consultancy. She's also a co-founder, Food Safety Action Network. Julian B. Chiganda, founder, Bold and Fearless. She's also a community organizer African diaspora for change, and not least, Louise Uwachu, author and producer. You and I, television talk show, Show TV Vancouver channel. She joins us via telephone link up from the Western Canadian province of British Columbia. Well, ladies, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Nice to be here.
Yeah.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome, Uwachu. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. Monipel, how do you feel about the package? Looking at some of the great female role models for you, really.
Right. So I think this is a great topic, and this is also a good platform to talk about it. And to say, just to start with my life, I think women empowerment is really something that is most considerable, that we have to consider in every aspect of our lives in Africa. So I, being the last girl of my family, it's a privilege to not really have my sisters in the role I'm playing, but to look up to other mentors and focusing on what they're doing and believing in myself and getting to this far. So I believe that everybody is born to make it, whether a man or a woman. So a woman has a chance to also change the economy and make the world a better place.
How was the experience of being a Hubert Humphrey Fellow at Cornell University for the past 1 year?
It's been exciting. It's been very encouraging. And it's my first time in the United States of America. And
really?
Yes. So last year, I got a call and from the U.S. Embassy in Ghana from one lady, Aisha. And she told me, this is a competitive and prestigious program, and you need to really pull up. And it comes with, like, men and women fighting for the same position, and we just need three people. So I told her, Aisha, I believe in what I can do for the society, and I believe that what men can do, I can do something too. So if you give me the chance, I can prove my point, but I hope for the best. Then after a couple of months, she called me and she said, congratulations, you've received the award. So we go to the States, and my 10 months as a Hubert Humphrey Fellow has always been meeting professionals, let's say lecturers, and also people in my industry, in the food safety industry. So you get a chance to walk into people's companies, institutions. Sometimes you Google their names, like I Googled your name. So you Google their names and you make a phone call, they don't pick up, you follow it up with an email, they don't respond, you visit them. So sometimes you book to visit them, other times you just have to try. So I think being able to go through a successful Humphrey Fellowship program was all about determination and endurance.
How gender sensitive was the Humphrey Fellowship? Did it reflect, for example, gender equality?
Right. So this year, the most surprising thing is that the main topic for the Humphrey program for the year was also on gender equality.
Interesting.
So in October last year, all the fellows, 168, from various developing countries came to Washington, D.C. here, where we had to give topics. Presentation from various universities on gender equality. So my school, and I know my fellows out there, all the Cornell fellows out there are watching me, and they can attest to it that we gave a presentation on, in quote, toilet. So the how developing countries like Africa and Asia, people have, like ladies have the problems with access to toilet and good drinking water. So we spoke about the fact that it affects even the education. And we, as a Humphrey group, we had 6 women and 6 men at Cornell. So we had the same platform, and our coordinators did so well. So we used to pair each other up, And sometimes it's a man against a woman. Mm. Other times it's just two women. And we had a lot of platforms where we shared ideas. And I believe my cis guys out there know that we, the ladies, also, like, we're very competitive. And we also taught them a lot throughout this program, as they also taught us.
Very interesting. Julianne, what about you? How important is this topic for today?
I actually think it's very vital right now. I mean, here in the United States where we're broadcasting from, there's a big to-do because Wonder Woman just came out, the movie. And I've been seeing so much about Wonder Woman on television, and everybody's talking about it. It's a great movie. But then there's the question of why has it taken this long for there to be a movie about a Wonder Woman superhero, a female superhero, when we know that we have everyday heroes that are females in our own lives. But, you know, just looking at how Hollywood reflects real life in so many ways, it just shows that, you know, this is our time now. You know, Wonder Woman is here. We don't have any excuses. but I actually think it's very timely. I have a 13-year-old daughter. So with her, I've always been very mindful about what I say and what I tell her she's capable of. For me, thankfully, or not in some ways, but in a lot of ways, I've been very advantaged because I've grown up in the United States. I've grown up in the D.C. area. So I've had access to so many opportunities that I know so many of my people back home may not have. Mm-hmm. And I think I have a different vantage point of what is possible and what isn't as a woman. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say there's not still challenges as women in the United States. But I've never, you know, I've tried never to look at the fact that I'm a female first. I try to look, and I say the same thing to my daughter. You know, you're capable of anything you put your mind to. Don't ever let anybody tell you differently. But unfortunately, that's not the message we get from the world. So I believe that mentorship is incredibly important for women and women's empowerment. And I think we need to do more of that as women for one another.
Very interesting. Louise, what about you from your vantage point? How important is today's topic to you as a female?
Well, I think it's an identity question. You know, do I identify myself as a female? Isn't identifying myself as a female limiting myself? Because we need to remember that we are spiritual beings and that the spirit is not male, it is not female. And we come to this planet, we are imprisoned in these bodies, and we must not distract ourselves by the bodies that we have come into and start defining ourselves according to the body that we have. We must rise higher and define ourselves higher than our bodies, higher than our races, higher than our tribes. And this is how we will become empowered. Because what is power? Power is the ability to do something, to accomplish something. And how do you measure someone's power? Is to see how many obstacles they have overcome in order to accomplish what they have accomplished. Then you can say that being is powerful. So if we're going to empower women and men and everybody, we need to start from the identity that we give ourselves.
Very interesting. I was reading about you, and I discovered that you have written a couple of books, but especially the first one. Can you tell us about that? We're talking about The Nightmare of Post-Vision.
Yes, my first book is titled The Nightmare of a Positive Vision. So it's this idea that I'm a survivor of Rwanda, I'm a survivor of war, massacres, and genocide, and I came to Canada as a refugee, and I came here with a purpose. And that purpose of living happily ever after and bringing joy and peace to my world and bringing education that would eliminate hatred, division, and war, that purpose has always been interfered with negative things. So I tell people it's kind of a nightmare to have a positive vision because this world is so full of negative things, and we have survived such negative things that it's a nightmare in itself to have a positive vision. But in my book, I explain to people how I've been through that and how I've been able to conquer my nightmares and still become powerful and still be able to accomplish what I came here to accomplish and still be able to do in Canada what most people have, you know, are not able to do.
Very interesting. Now we'll pause for a short break, and we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and watch our show live, and don't forget to share it with your friends. Also, we are on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA African Women. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiu Yuwat, and of course this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you again, Moni Pell. If you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of your Ghanaian heart and soul, do you really think that women, especially in Ghana, are better off today than they were, for example, 10 years ago? And if so, why?
Oh, thank you for the question, Shaka. So I always tell people whenever I get a platform that women empowerment and women rights is a human right. It is not something we have to fight for. Mm-hmm. It is our right. So, and we are not running a race with men. We are just asking for our right, equal right. So in Ghana, I think looking at a few years back till now, Ghana has improved a lot. At least looking from the time of President Rawlings through to President Jacob Kufuor, through to President Mahama and the late president till now, a lot has taken place. So let me cite examples, the positive, and I'll hit on the negative. So on the positive side, I would say that initially when you go to the university, medicine and all the big courses were for men. Mm-hmm. And programs like my program, which is food science, were for women. Mm-hmm. And I remember way back at Ken University with my roommate, a guy walked to our room and he said, "What course do you offer?" My roommate mentioned her own. And when he asked me, I said, "I'm a food scientist." He said, "Do you sell wache? Do you sell jollof? Do you sell?" And he started mentioning all the Ghanaian foods. And I'm like, food science is not about selling food on the street. Mm. And this guy is a pharmacist, and he never respected my course. So people always have the impression that women should always go for something little or something that is not recognized. And to be a woman, if you have to go far to offer medicine, there is no family backup. Mm-hmm. Initially in Ghana, because people go like, you have to get married early, 7 years in medical school, you come back, you have to go for rotation, you have to do this, your family will be counting the number of years for you. And sometimes, even here, when I got here, my cousin was advising me, sometimes when you try to go so far, there is the perception that men are afraid to approach you. So then why do I have to go far when I know that I'll just be married to somebody one day? Why don't I just sit down with my SHS degree or just a normal bachelor degree and wait for somebody who is a medical doctor to marry me or somebody who has attained something better? So years ago, it was that kind of challenge. And women in the classroom used to be like, having more men against the women. So even if you want to ask a question, that intimidation was there, and it was much of a problem. So I remember when my dad wanted me to be a marine engineer, and he took me to the Marine University. Mm-hmm. I was the only lady in 46 in the class of 46 people and 45 men. So I survived, and because of one or two things, I had to leave the school, not for the fact that I was the only lady, but like financial stuff. Mm. So I left the school, and I continued at KNUST for this program. But sometimes I sit back and I just assess it, and I remember when a friend told me that if you were a marine engineer, by now you'll be on sea, and there'll be no man for you. There'll be no life for you. So I think now ladies are doing so much. We have marine engineers, and we have medical doctors. I respect them so much. And for me, I think looking at a lot of mentors in my life in Ghana, I don't look so far. Mm. I look at people in Ghana, and sometimes I look at other people too. Like Ellen, I got a chance to meet her, and it was a privilege. Former president of Liberia, and I'm like, well, I want to be like you one day.
Really?
So, yes.
You
so,
mean the incumbent president of Liberia?
Of Liberia, yes.
By the way, the package referred to her as the first female African head of state. That is not correct. What is correct is that she is the first democratically elected African female head of state, because the distinction of the first African female head of state goes to another great lady from Liberia who is now the late Ruth Perry, back in 1996.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah.
Right.
So you were talking about...
Yeah, I look up to her a lot, and I look up to former president of Malawi too. And I met her at the World Food Prize Symposium, and listen, looking at her sit on the stage, mm-hmm. I'm like, I can be like her. Why should there be limitations? She's a woman just like me. Mm-hmm. She has children. She spoke about it on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't I be like her? So I think these are some of the things that has also helped Ghana to develop. So the few ladies that came out are out of all the odds and became who they wanted to be, they've also motivated some of us. So I was telling my dad yesterday, Dad, I want to make you proud. I want to have my PhD and be the first person to be called a doctor for you in among your kids. And he's like, I'm waiting to see that.
Very interesting.
And I'm not afraid. I want to do that because I know ladies have attained that and I can do it too.
What about thinking about perhaps becoming the first Ghanaian female president?
I would love that. So that's why I look at former president of Liberia, and I also look at the former president of Malawi a lot. I have their names in my diary, and I normally research about them, and I look at it. And sometimes people tell me, I think you'll be a politician one day. I'm looking up to that. My dad is a politician, and probably I will. But for now, I just want to add my quota to the food industry and also have platforms like this to empower women and like not just go keep going alone, but have people to go together with me. So some of the negatives in Ghana happens to be violence. And sometimes when I came here as part of the Humphrey program, they had a whole seminar for us where they spoke to us about violence at the workplace. So they're like, if somebody touches your breast, somebody touches any part, you should report it, and they are not supposed to. But then when my coordinator was standing there and giving us this presentation, I just threw my mind back to Ghana. If you are in the classroom, if you are at the workplace, and you go and submit your report to your boss and he touches you, what can you do? You just scream. You just say a word.
Really?
Yes. Because if I want to take it far, I have to go for my own lawyer, and sometimes your voice may not be heard.
Who is the Chief Justice of Ghana?
So, currently, I just don't know who the Chief Justice is, because I think the government is also still, like, putting up.
But until recently, you did have a female Chief Justice,
yes,
correct?
Yes, yes, yes. And
you mean she will not hold your back legally?
She will, but that is if you get somebody to take you that far. But I'm talking about, I coming from that town called Nkoko Okwewu, and imagine with my background, at least I'm from the average Ghanaian home. If somebody from the poor home has a problem like this at the workplace, who will take up the fight for her?
Very
so sometimes you need somebody to be like, okay, I'm just a lawyer, as in over here in the United States, I'm told you have state lawyers, attorneys, who can take up cases. In Ghana, we do have it. How do you even assess them? So that those are some of the challenges that I'm throwing up to the government over there and to all African governments that they should try and improve on it and help us a lot. And other part of it is whereby if you need a job, you qualify and you know you qualify very well. But now the job rate goes still for more on the men's side. Mm-hmm. So if you're a lady, the likelihood that sometimes your boss wants to have an affair with you before he can give you that secure job, and sometimes they even lie to you. So there have been instances where people go through all this, and I know a lot of ladies are hiding out there. How can you talk about it? It's embarrassing. How can you talk about it? You go and tell somebody, this man had to, like, engage me sexually before giving me the job, and later on he fired me. You can't explain it to anybody, so you shut up, and sometimes you just stay with it, or other times you just have to leave. And another platform is whereby there is equality in the picture. Mm. So you are being made or believe that there is equality at this workplace or there is equality in this school. But whenever there is a situation whereby the voice of the lady must be heard, she's silenced. So an example is if they give equal platform like to us, to the men, as they give to the men, mm. I think ladies should be able to sometimes walk to their bosses without any fear. Mm-hmm. But it's like men have that inner confidence as compared to women, even as of now. A lot of women are doing it. They are doing so well by building up their self-esteem and their confidence. But people are still afraid because you're counting on your children at home. What if I tell him I don't like that and I lose my job? Who would take care of my children?
Julianne, you listen to Moni Pearl. Mm-hmm. How do you react to that? How do you react to some of the things that she has said? And in fact, what type of obstacles or challenges have you encountered as a female, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I mean, so many of the things that you know, African women deal with in Africa, those are the same challenges we have here in the U.S. in a lot of ways. Fortunately, we have, I think, a better justice system that's actually implemented for the most part. But, I mean, we have instances here, and this is not even in the workplace, but there's been so many instances of young black girls who go to school with their hair natural, in the natural state, not straightened, not in braids, any of that, and they're being told to go home because their hair is not following the dress code. There's been so many stories of that. You have girls who are being made fun of. And so, you know, it actually starts at that young age. And this is where, you know, there's this wonderful African proverb that says sticks in a bundle aren't easily broken. Mm-hmm. This is where I think as women we really need to unite more. We need to collaborate more. We need that mentorship. I think so often, unfortunately, we find that we're competing with one another, mm-hmm. when in reality, we should be supporting one another. Because when you think about what happened in Liberia and how the Liberian women ended the Civil War, that in and of itself is just such an incredible story. So I think there's so many examples that have been given already by so many people, so many women, about the things that really work. But I think so often we try to do things by ourselves versus actually collaborating and supporting and mentoring one another.
Really?
Really.
You know, you again, as I was doing a bit of research about you, I discovered that you have a mission.
I do.
Can you tell us about that very briefly?
Well, I was born in Uganda. And my mother's actually Rwandese, so I claim both. But I've grown up in the United States. And, you know, growing up, it was very challenging to grow up as in an African household because, yes, we were here, but we were still very much African children, and our parents raised us that way. So we had a lot of challenges. I know my siblings and I know so many other African children go through this, where you're trying to be like your peers, your American peers, but then you're still being raised in a very African household. So you have these self-esteem issues and, you know, you have to work through that. So for me, a big part of my mission is just teaching people to be proud of where they come from and who they are, who they're created to be, so that they can really, I don't think you can truly walk in your purpose until you've embraced all of who you've been created to be. That I believe to be true. And I think too often we're trying to do too much to ourselves.
Right.
You know, I have no problem people doing their hair however they want and all that. But, you know, I hear about the skin bleaching and everybody's wearing weaves. Again, there's nothing wrong with wearing a weave, right? But if you need that weave to make you feel important, then there's a problem.
I suppose this has to be an African dress.
Absolutely. The African, it's actually Ghanaian, by a Ghanaian designer.
Very, very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct, and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiyuwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. Live from Washington, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Well, thanks, Shaka. We received outstanding feedback on our social media platforms this week. A lot of women in Africa are facing a variety of legal, economic, and social constraints that affect their access to education, property, money, and their ability to make choices about their life. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what steps should be taken to accelerate gender equality and the empowerment of women in Africa? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. The majority of our comments this week came from men, but ladies, it's not too late to join the conversation on Facebook or Twitter. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA African Women. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Rehan Muyanja, who writes, give equal opportunities and shared responsibilities to all men and women, girls and boys. And we have another tweet from Immigrant Magazine, which tweeted, plenty to discuss on this issue that stifles growth and perpetuates misogyny in our cultures. Hashtag women are equal to men. Well, let's go to a comment from Facebook fan Abba M. Dabo from Nigeria, who has a difference of opinion. He says, with due respect, to me, this question has no answer because men and women are not equal and will never be. If this agitation continues, men will have to start agitating for gender balancing, which will give men a chance to get what women enjoy in workplaces like maternity leave. An interesting perspective, one which I expect will trigger conversation on social media. Let's go to another Facebook comment from Prince Nkula Herbert Warigara Jr. from Uganda. He says, female political representative positions should have term limits. That is to say, a 10-year term, then one retires. In that way, other women can be empowered. In Uganda, my home country, we have one female representative in the National Assembly per district who actually goes to parliament by the mere fact that she is female. But there are no term limits. Another very interesting comment. Thanks for sharing. And now to our comment of the week from Facebook fan Hussein Muyumba from Tanzania, who writes, the initiative to achieve gender equality and female empowerment should emerge from women themselves. Women should be able to decide on which key steps they need that will lead to greater equality and empowerment. In my opinion, education remains the greatest factor needed to lift women out of poverty, mistreatment, ignorance, and a futureless society. Very interesting. Now, a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or you can post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Interact with our show as it's streaming live. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. Or you can simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next, Straight Talk Africa, a preview of the Kenyan presidential election, the race between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and Raila Odinga. The main opposition candidate is looking increasingly competitive. The Carter Center is observing the general election at the invitation of Kenya's Independent Electoral Commission. A discussion on the Kenyan presidential election on the next Straight Talk Africa. Well, Shaka, again, our social media segment this week was dominated by men, as I said before, but no doubt it has triggered a round of interesting conversation. Over to you.
I wonder what those sisters out there are doing, why they can't, in fact, somehow figure out a way of interacting with us. Well, thanks again for sharing the social media reaction with us. And of course, welcome back. And today we are discussing challenges facing women and girls in Africa in their struggle for gender equality. Our distinguished guests are Monipe Owusuwa Ansong, Julianne B. Chiganda, and Louise Uwachu, who joins us via telephone link up from the Western Canadian city of Vancouver. Once again, ladies, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Shaka.
Yes, Louise, your reaction. You've been listening, of course, to INBR and the social media reaction. What is your immediate reaction to what you've heard?
I say that the race to equality, as I see it, is a race to nowhere. I am not going to be participating in the race to equality because I think that it's a race to nowhere. The truth is what is true, what was true yesterday, what is true today, and what will be true tomorrow. And that truth is that men and women are not the same. If we are the same, then one of us is not needed. If we are the same, one of us is not needed. If one of us is not needed, why are we both here? If we really need examples on how to have a peaceful society where men and women have all their rights, we need to look at ancient Africa as an example. In ancient Africa, we had found a way for balance. Men and women are complementary beings. Men have their advantages, women have their advantages, and we need to learn to work within our advantages depending on the bodies and the environment in which we are. So this whole idea of equality is bringing on competition. We don't need our men and women to be in competition. We need collaboration, and we are complementary beings. So how can we be equal? So I'm thinking that the race to equality is a race to nowhere, and we need to redefine that equality. And anyways, I'm asking the question. So, why should we, African women, settle for equality when we have had divinity? And I'm talking about, for example, today, where is the female imam? Where is the female rabbi? Where is the female pope? Those people do not exist. These other societies out of Africa have disrespected their women for so long. But in Africa, in ancient Africa, our women were so respected. Our women were divinities. They were deities. They were queens. They were queen mothers. They were prime ministers. This whole idea of these recent leaders being the first head of state is not real, because we have had heads of state as women since ancient times, you know? And the whole concept of justice and balance and truth is represented by a woman, Maat. And Maat is the deity that represents truth, balance, and law. And when you think about Maat in Kinyarwanda, is Amateka, Amategeko, a society which is ruled by laws. And those laws govern the entire society, and they do not discriminate between men and women. Women have always been honored I'm so happy that I was born a Rwandan woman. If you're going to be born on this planet and be honored as a woman, you need to be born in Africa, because that's really the place where women have always had great position, have always been in power. And women were never enslaved or under the men until Africa got invaded. This is something that we need to take into consideration. All these things that we talk about, genital mutilation, these are not African. These are imported things that were imposed on Africa. And the status of the woman, the African woman, being reduced what it has become, it's not an African thing, you know? So we need to look at ourselves from the inside. Our heroes need to be our ancestors. We cannot take heroes that are coming from the outside. We do not have the same journey. European women have a reason to fight for equality because they were oppressed. They were oppressed for so long, and they never had their rights. They never have their own name. They have to take their father's name. When they get married, they have to take their husband's name. So we've always had our own names, and we can make our own names, and we've never really been limited. And I will end off in Kinyarwanda saying that in Kinyarwanda, we truly honor the woman. And we say that, umugore ni umutima w'urugo. Does it get higher than that? A woman is the heart of the family. Umutima, the heart, is not just a heart. It's also the consciousness. It's also the soul. So the idea that a woman is powerful enough and elevated enough to be the soul and the heart and the consciousness of the family, and then we're here fighting for equality, I say no. Why settle for equality when we have had divinity?
Louise Uwachu, indeed, well spoken. But if I may ask you a question, Louise.
Yes.
I am sure that you have read all over the place or heard about that there is something akin to a revolution in favor of women in your motherland, Rwanda. How do you respond to that? Do you think that from what you have seen, that it is true, in fact, that there is a revolution in favor of women in Rwanda? Are women in Rwanda better off today, for example, than they were 20 years ago?
Better, we need to define that better. What would better be, you know? We need education, we need entrepreneurship, we need creativity, we need people to know themselves, we need people to love themselves. So I don't know if women are better off today than they were back in the days. I know people talk a lot about the Rwandan parliament being majority of women, mm-hmm. but I challenge ourselves in... We cannot just look at the numbers and say, oh, we have so many women in parliament. That means that women have been empowered and they have a voice now. We need to look at the parliament as an institution itself. It's supposed to be independent, supposed to accomplish things. So if those women are sitting in parliament, and despite the fact that they are the majority in parliament, they're incapable of accomplishing things such as supervising the government, scrutinizing the leadership, creating laws that are truly made for the people, and representing the people, and challenging what's going on. You know, Rwanda has trashed its constitution in the interest of His Excellency President Kagame, so he may become president again. How can a majority parliament of women allow that to happen? It actually shows that they are powerless under the excuse that, oh, the people ask for it, the people love the leader, but you, as the representative of the people and the leadership, you're supposed to know better. Why do your people have to hate you before you leave office? It's a great thing that your people still love you by the time you leave office. But we have a constitution, and we have had a war, and we have had massacres and genocide, all that because of dictatorship, all that because of bad leadership that does not want to leave office when the time comes to leave office. And here again, we have an opportunity to change history. And we have women, majority in parliament. What do? They allow the constitution to get trashed.
How do they get to parliament?
Is that a reflection of their power? They would have been powerful women if there would have been actually a debate, if there would have been contest, contested, if they would have been, you know, like something that shows that they have tried to take into consideration all our history and say, hey, we cannot change the rules of the game at the end of the game. It's like Manchester, Real Madrid is playing Barcelona, and at the end of the game, people are like, oh, actually, we are changing the rules of the game by now so we could play more time so these guys can have more opportunity to win. Doesn't happen like that. I think they have endangered the country. And I'm sending them this message, and I'm warning them because our country has suffered so much. So women, if they are truly empowered, then they need to use their voice and their positions to challenge what is wrong.
But what about the mode of selection? How do they, in fact, get to parliament? Are they elected by the ordinary Rwandan voter, or are they, in fact, appointed by the appointing authority, the individual authority?
Exactly. That's a whole other debate, because a parliament is supposed to represent the people. The people are supposed to choose their own representative. So are the people truly choosing their own representative, or are those women selected? And are they selected because us Rwandan women are considered to be so nice, so calm, we don't really challenge our men, and so they will not challenge the men in power? Some people have said that. The reason why we have so many women is because they will not challenge as well as the men would have challenged. So what I suggest is that instead of this competition between our men and our women, we could have a parliament that is 100% women, and we could have a parliament that is 100% men. We could have two parliaments. This has happened in Africa, where we have a parliament of women, we have a parliament of men, and they both study the same questions in the interest of the people. There's an instance where the parliament of men votes against war and the parliament of women votes for war, and they go to war and they win against the invaders. Can't remember the exact name of these people that I'm mentioning, but this is in African history. The whole idea that we have a majority of women in parliament, I say, no, let's go further. Have a parliament full of women and have another parliament full of men. Let the men and the women study the questions, the people's questions, separately, and then come together and vote. That way there will be no competition between our men and women, and all our men and women will be representing the people.
Very interesting. So basically, I think what I hear from Louise is that, yes, it is true that the women in Rwanda, they pretty much belong to the Guinness Book of Records, because they obviously have the single largest number of females compared to anywhere else, you know, on this planet Earth. But the fact of the matter is, these people, in fact, do not have power. These ladies essentially reflect the interests, the concerns of the appointing authority, in which case they don't, in fact, even represent their fellow women.
Yeah.
Is that democracy?
It's not.
Really?
Is that empowerment?
It's not.
Very interesting.
So, actually, Louise, you made very interesting comments, and at some point I was, like, just in tune with her. But I think that, as I said earlier, women empowerment is not really about running a race with men. We're just trying to let every woman out there in Africa and in any part of the world to know that whatever that is in you, you can bring it out.
Exercise their inalienable right as
human beings. Good.
Exactly.
So it's all about we having our right, human right. So as a woman, if I think that I can, as she said, I have a family, I have three brothers, and I have two mature brothers, I'm not saying that if I want to share, I want to have equal rights with them, I'm going to be rude to them, or I won't respect my dad anymore. No. So as an African woman, you know your culture.
You respect your big brother.
I do. I do. I have two big brothers, and I respect them a lot.
Very interesting.
Yes.
But talk to me, Juliet. Why is it that, for example, society has no problem with respecting a mother? Society has no problem respecting a sister, a wife, perhaps. But why is it that when we talk about women, for some strange reason, those types of women seem to be super women. Why?
That's a very good question. Well, I think a lot of it is that we are all enamored with the people we think are in power, with the people who we think are superhuman. And we forget that those people are human too. I was having a conversation with some friends today, in fact, and I said, you know, at the end of the day, we all put our pants on one leg at a time. So, you know, whether you're somebody who's extremely visible and you're out here doing amazing things, or whether you're a mother at home and you're raising women who are going to be superwomen, we all deserve the same amount of respect. And I think we have to stop putting people on pedestals where, quite frankly, I'm finding many of them don't belong.
Very interesting. We have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. And I gather that we do have one, Danimile Dede from the Republic of Tanzania. Good evening, Dede. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Can you hear me? Dede, can you hear me? I'm afraid we don't seem to be connecting. Let's come back to you, Juliana. What do you think really, you know, what do you think needs to happen in order to level the playing field between male and female? Is it about perhaps a need for fundamental changes in attitudes and mindsets in both women and men?
Absolutely. And you know, to go back to the equality question real quick, I think it's less about equality than it is about equity. Because those
are two different things. What's the difference, tell us?
So the difference is, you know, I saw this, it's a great cartoon that I saw, where we're talking about equality, you know, between blacks and whites, right? So you can have somebody who's saying, okay, I want to be equal to you. So you're both allowed to go to whatever university you want. But at the end of the day, if this person here hasn't had the same advantages of getting, you know, the kind of education that you've had to be prepared for that university, but he's still having the same opportunity, yeah, you're getting equality, but that's not really equity. You're both having equal opportunities, but there's no real equity because this person already has a head start. So I think that's the difference. I think we have to look at equity from the very beginning in order for there to even be a chance for women to be able to accomplish the things that we know we're capable of. So, you know, I would have to say, I'm sorry, repeat the question again, because I was really focused on the equity piece.
Essentially, I was wondering whether you think that there's a need.
Oh, yes, attitudes, absolutely. Yeah. So I think we as women have to take some of that responsibility. We have been raised as African women, because even though I was raised in the U.S., I'm still very much in tune with my African culture. And we were raised to always respect our elders. Now,
but you were raised by who? The last time I checked, tell you the truth, it seems to me you're talking about women raising children, both girls and boys.
Absolutely, but my father
and
was also very much...
It is also, the last time I checked, a woman, in fact, who carries... a fetus or a kid in her womb for 9 months and takes care of this kid up to a point where this kid actually gets the fundamental tools of being a human being.
But
is it possible that, in fact, it's probably the women really that have the power to change some of these things
around?
And
that's what I'm saying. We have to take some of that responsibility. Because if we don't change our mindsets, you know, as I was saying, I was raised in a very, you know, our culture was very much ingrained in us. And so for women in the Ugandan culture, we're taught to kneel, very much so. We're taught to kneel. We're taught not to say anything if our husband goes and has all these other kids. All of that, right? But at the same time, if you are now seeing that, wait a minute, you have all these examples around you of women who have done amazing things, then you have to know, okay, there's nothing wrong with still being respectful to your elders.
Correct.
But when it comes to business or going after the things that you want, you still respect them, but that doesn't mean that you don't go after what you want. We have this thing in us sometimes, and I would have to say, maybe I see it more in the East African culture, where we're very meek and humble and, you know, afraid to be bold. But, I mean, that's one of the reasons I started Bold and Fearless, because I think as women, we have to be bolder about the things that we want if we're really going to achieve equity, and we have to be willing to change our mindsets and go and learn the things that we may not be as well versed in order to be successful in whatever area we want to be successful in.
Louise, what about that? In fact, what about making sure that the fundamental issues of life that both male and female are on the same page? We're talking about education, we're talking about health care, we're talking about decent housing and what have you. Those types of things. What about those types of things becoming, in fact, human rights as opposed to privileges?
Yes, you know, I think one of the problems in Africa or with Africans is the fact that we are also discussing these issues in English. Because in our own languages, in our own culture, things are so clear. Mm-hmm. And there is no confusion about this and that. And in Kenya-Rwanda, women are held to higher standards. And the reason why women are held to higher standards and the reason why we can't really fight for equality because we would sort of be losing our status is because women are actually the ones who are raising the children, like you're saying. Everybody is talking from the experience of being raised. Women are the number one influencers of the children. So because the women are the number one influencers of the next generation, women are held to higher standards. Rwandan women, Umunyarwanda kazi, is expected to be perfect. Every Rwandan woman, everywhere we are supposed to represent perfection. Because they say in Kinyarwanda, umukobwa w'umwe agatukisha bose. Meaning, if one woman strays away from perfection, they're going to blame all the women. And why should all the women be perfect? Why should a woman be perfect or at least aspire to perfection? Is because this woman is going to be carrying and raising the next generation. So the next generation has to have a very high standard to aspire to, and these are women. So if our society is tougher on women, it's out of love, my people.
I like that. Well, you heard it all, Monipero.
Yeah.
You have the last word.
Right. So I think, as we said, it's a human right. We can't run away from that. We can't hide away from it. So wherever every woman is, access to infrastructure, access to amenities should be easy. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a lady and I'm at a village whereby in Ghana, there are some villages whereby guys can go outside and just stand outside and urinate and pee. But if I'm a lady and I'm in my menses and there is no toilet facility for me, how do I access this then? So it means during my 7 days period, I don't go to school. And access to water, if a guy can easily walk to the riverside and I'm a lady and I'm in labor and right. I live in the same community, how do I get access to these things? So these are some of the things we're looking out for. And we're also saying that when you think that there is something in your woman that can come out, support the woman.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally.
Right.
Well, on that note, thanks to our three distinguished guests, Monipero Osua Ansong, Julian B. Chiganda, and Louise Uwachu, who joined us from the Western Canadian city of Vancouver. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, African women. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.